There are those winding roads that crisscross back and forth through the mountains that perhaps make us all a little bit nervous. That even on a good day, sun in the sky, not a cloud to be seen, we can see miles in front of us. We still drive a little bit slower and hold the steering wheel a little bit tighter. But on those days when the fog sets in and we can see as far as the hood ornament in front of us, the road seems to narrow so much that two cars don't even have room to pass, and we are making our way around one of those blind curves. It is absolutely terrifying. We slow down to a near creep because we feel helpless and afraid. That is a feeling that finds us in many ways throughout this life. As we face the blind curves that are in front of us, it is a feeling that Psalm 30 captures when it says, "Hear, O Lord, and be gracious to me. O Lord, be my helper." That we reach out to God, feeling as if we have no other choice, feeling the weight of grief or anxiety, fear or disappointment, failure or doubt. But the psalmist reminds us there is hope around the corner, even if it is not seen, when it says, "You have turned my mourning into dancing. You have taken off my sackcloth and clothed me with joy so that my soul may praise you and not be silent. O Lord, my God, I will give thanks to you forever." Now, this does not make the blind curves of life any less traumatic. But it does remind us there is always a sense of hope. A good friend of mine once told me a story about trying to put his son to bed. His son had always been a wonderful sleeper, that he would go in each night, read him a bedtime story. There were four or five in the rotation. He would kiss him on the forehead, turn out the light, close the door, and leave, and his son always fell fast asleep. But then, all of a sudden, out of the blue, his son became afraid of the dark, a phase that finds many of us. And he didn't know how to help his son get through this fear. Each night he would go in, finish reading the bedtime story, and his son would say, "Don't leave, don't leave, don't turn out the light." And nothing he said seemed to help. So he finally gave his son a choice. He said, "Okay, I'll kiss you on the head, and I can either turn out the light, but I'll stay right here sitting on the end of bed until you fall asleep, or I will leave, but I will leave the light on." His son thought for a second and finally said, "Okay, you can turn the light off, but you have to stay." Perhaps we would make a similar choice, preferring God's presence in the darkness to God's absence in the light. We find a similar dynamic in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus turns to all these disciples and says, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few." And then he sends them out with a job description, going to various villages, tending to people's needs, speaking to others of the grace of God. But he says, as you go, do not take a bag. Don't take a purse. Don't even take sandals, which is quite the list of what not to take. But the list of what not to take is not as important as the fact that Jesus sent them out in pairs. That none of us are meant to do this life alone. Now, I know that sounds rather simple. In fact, too simple to really matter. That is, until we find ourselves in one of those moments that is absolutely overwhelming. And we discover how profoundly meaningful that really is. It's why the church is meant to draw us outside of ourselves, towards God and towards one another, to have this care and concern for one another. And it's been that way since the beginning of the church. In fact, when Aristides was writing the Emperor Hadrian, describing Christians, he said this: falsehood is not found among them, and they love one another, and from widows they will not turn away, and they deliver the orphan from the one who treats them harshly. And he who has gives to him who has not without boasting. And when they see a stranger, they take him to their homes and rejoice over him as a very brother. And if there are among them any that is poor and needy, and if they have no spare food themselves, they fast 2 or 3 days in order to supply the needy their lack of food. Now that is quite the reputation. Almost unbelievable. Because we all know what it feels like to be let down by others. That the church has not always lived up to its reputation. I'll never forget, more than 10 years ago now, standing in the narthex right before worship, and a Sunday school teacher came walking in looking tattered and tired. The class had just let out, and I said, "Are you okay?" He said, "Yes, but I'm not sure I'm a very good Sunday school teacher." And he was a fabulous teacher, spending time each week with the elementary school children. I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, the lesson this morning was on turning the other cheek, and it was going really well. They were paying attention. They asked questions. We talked about examples that they could relate to. But then we broke from group time, and they went to their tables to do crafts. And two of them had their eye on the same green marker. And a fight broke out. And we just talked about turning the other cheek." Of course, that applies to all ages of the church. Because we have not always lived up to our reputation. That great preacher Harry Emerson Fosdick once wrote, "The question is not, is Christianity believable? The question is it possible? Can we bring it into reality?" That is the question. And we need to be reminded every so often of what is possible. Not just what we see around us, but what is possible. It's the difference between sitting in astronomy class in a lab with four walls and no windows, reading the textbook, flipping page after page, learning about the solar system, looking at pictures and images of star configurations, and then walking outside, looking up at the sky at night and seeing all of those stars and feeling that sense of awe in the presence of God, reminding us of what could be possible. Or we could also look down to see what is possible by looking at what is practical, what it means to be sent out in pairs, for the church to walk alongside of us. It might just be a kind question of concern from a complete stranger. Or there's a ring at the front door and someone's dropping off a casserole in the middle of a tedious week. It could be a note in the mailbox that was unexpected. It might be the faithful prayers of others when we are struggling to pray ourselves, or the friend that shows up when we do not have the strength to be alone. It might be a line in the choir's anthem during worship, or the person sitting next to us in the pew when they have no idea what it means for them to be sitting next to us that morning. That we might not realize it at first, because as we make our ways around the blind curves of life, we are too terrified to take our eyes off of the road and look at the passenger seat. But rest assured, we are never alone. We are never alone. It is that practical concern that Paul writes to those in Galatia. We are to bear one another's burdens. And in doing so, we discover what that old proverb means when it says, when we row someone else across the river, we get there ourselves. That we make our way around the blind curves together. That is the ministry of presence. Because the love of God is embedded in the love of neighbor. And it is both possible and practical. And every single time it happens, it is sacred and even beautiful. Thanks be to God for the church. Amen.